you could see what was going on,
yeah.
You know, and you knew family and what you had to do was a priority for you.
Yeah, yeah. And then I also knew this. Because of my background, I wasn't a guy that they could easily deceive. I'm going to tell you about Sam Jones. There was a family around here named Moses, and one of them told Leroy about this boy, Sam mm-hmm. Jones, who could play piano.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that, Sam was a nice guy, you mm-hmm. could get along. When he got that gig with Brown at the Celebrity Club, he got important, mm-hmm. didn't speak to nobody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guys
mm-hmm.
that he knew.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, after he left Brown, he went over in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Carl Pruitt happened to come through and say to me, hey, Kirk, there's a guy over there in Philly from Pittsburgh, and he, in my estimate, can play as much as Earl. See, Earl couldn't play with a group because
right,
he changed
right,
keys on
right.
him. He said, but he's over there washing dishes. It wasn't until about 4 or 5 years ago that Sam came back here, I think he was sick,
mm-hmm.
and Nelson Harris
right.
wrote up something about him, but I never got to see him. But you see around here, when a guy got on a steady gig somewhere, like Joe Porter, I met him when I joined Stoney Gossard's band back in 1933.
Mm-hmm.
See, before Joe Porter was there, it was a funeral director named Johnny Crunkleton.
Crunkleton from North City?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
After he got established, he went into the funeral program, and that's when they got Joe Porter.
Mm-hmm.
And I played with Joe for about a month or two. Joe got the gig out of the Club Mirador.
Mm-hmm.
He could speak. He was wearing his derby and Chesterfield coat. So I just looked at him. The only thing when I saw him, it had anything to do with Joe, we went to a place called, in Alabama, where Fort McClellan was.
Mm-hmm.
And we happened to stop in there, and somebody was talking. There's some guys from Pittsburgh that come in this little cafe. Mickey Gray was down
mm-hmm.
there,
mm-hmm.
but he was relegated to social service.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah.
Right, yeah.
So we go out to the base, Fort McClellan. In that band was a guy named Trump from Chicago. That picture I showed, mm-hmm. you showed me in the book of Earl Hines' band,
right.
he was a tenor player.
Okay.
And anyhow, what happened, Joe had told them that he was an officer in Local 471, and they thought he was spoofing because all of the other guys that belonged to had got gold cards
right.
for the duration.
Right.
So when I went out there, then I explained it to him.
Yeah.
And I remember this, my bass drum head on one side is split. And Chico was drumming in the band.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't like him because he comes from L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys come from
mm-hmm.
Chicago. And they tell me that he was a child prodigy on drums. So they had an attitude about him. He said, look, man, I'll take care of you. I took the rim off. He took. He went in their supply and got a couple of heads
mm-hmm.
and put them in the shower to wet them down and tucked the heads for me.
Put on that
and I remember, I didn't see him no more till he brought a group to the grill.
Huh.
And I remind
yeah.
him of
it. You're talking Chico Hamilton?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But
right.
if I don't go through, they would have still mm-hmm. thought that Joe Porter was
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I saw Mickey. That was before he married his wife. Because he went up to the house where she lived, and he was going with her. And when the war was over, he had married her and brought her back here.
Uh-huh. Well, she was from
Dothan, Alabama.
Dothan, okay.
That's
yeah.
a railroad job.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then when Joe come back, he got a valve trombone,
uh-huh.
and they formed a big band. And Joe had come back from New York, and then Ducky was got a book involved.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe was playing valve trombone, and then let go. So but that's when Ducky had a hold of it. And Ducky wasn't nothing. Because he wouldn't even been in music had I not married his aunt. Same way with Jesse.
Jesse, yeah.
I was the most surprised person when I found out that Jesse was playing piano because his picture was in the paper when Carmen McRae came to Walt Harper's Attic. And that's when they had bass. And she fired bass because he couldn't cut her chair.
Yeah, yeah.
And then bass didn't keep time.
Yeah. And, yeah. A lot of that. Yeah.
Okay. Because we were talking about the first it was the Elmore Theater.
Yeah.
And then they closed it up right after the theater.
After it went out of the theater, it was just a building thinking, you know, I don't know what the hell in there because it being a theater and had to see some things in there. So what happened, somebody got to Harry Henry. And told him they wanted to have a big band. And he said, well, okay, I got the Savoy Ballroom. And he was holding dances there. So they took the Vern Stern Band and weeded out the people that they wanted to weed out and brought in new people. Then they started to rehearse. And Al Dewey is just like this Berger come here the week before last on CXDA, who was telling this Rick Adams on his show about how long it took him to transcribe. When back in 1933, Al Dewey transcribed Duke's whole book. He was a black pianist. Had perfect pitches, and this is what the band, Savoy Ballroom Orchestra, was founded on. And I know I can name the personnel that was in that band, because at that time, see, I met Earl Littlejohn in 1931. He was one of the first ones to get the bass dialed in. And there was another boy, Frank Clark, who Kenny Spearman took on the name of Clark because they took him in. And he wasn't a great bassist. He was a showman. And they started this band. But the downfall of it was, they hired a bus like the road band did when they went, had a driver and had a road manager, Johnny Watson, going big time. And they went down to Cincinnati to the cotton club and played a dance. And Al Sears and Rudy Carlin and them was hanging around there. So they said, yeah, man, you do a good job of imitating Duke, but what about you? Now, Al Dick could transcribe, but he couldn't arrange. Good theater. So then it was during the Depression years. They made a few gigs around here with two Hendrix connected, and they had the tails like Duke and all that. Then they sent and got Billy Eckstein. See this boy, George Floyd. George Floyd. He was the vocalist with the band, and they called him Cheney. But he had a kind of bad eye. So he was dark from there. So they got him out of there. And Billy Eckstein coming in town. And so Billy was going to be the front man. See, before Billy, there was two or three guys that they had considered to be the front man. But by Billy having connections with people like John Anderson, whose mother was active in the health.
And then, you're talking about the trumpet player?
Yeah, John Anderson. And they knew Billy. Yeah. So they brought him here. And he was going to be the front man. And he had been in D.C. all the years. And he did good. But on the local scene, he was never accepted as a vocalist. And his behavior, he was a dude of promiscuous behavior. He had a sister down in D.C. who was an educator. They sent him down there hoping he would turn up. And he got an eclectic in that. This is how he got the job with Earl Hines' band. because the nucleus of that band, the original Earl Hines band, Jimmy Mundy, Cecil White, and Walter Fuller, Walter Fuller.
Yes.
And all of those guys, they...
Were they from the D.C. area?
No, they were from all over the United States. Walter Fuller, George Dixon. See, this boy Bud Johnson didn't get in the band until after Cecil White, they was in a bus crash, and Cecil got killed. So that threw him in. Then Mundy, Jimmy Mundy left the band because he was a tremendous arranger. I'm going to say, did you ever hear Charlie Rouse?
Yeah.
Jimmy Mundy come out of D.C. And you know his much of the very style that Charlie Rouse, he got it from Jimmy Mundy.
Yeah. Okay.
And there was a guy named Walter Fuller.
I remember,
great trumpet and arranger and could sing.
Yeah.
And one of his favorite tunes was Rosetta. See, they all are a spin-off of what Louis was doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And this band, they lasted. In fact, we had a gigantic bottle of music of local bands down at the Christian Temple. With the Harlemites.
Was that the group from like the North Side or the Eldridges? And
no, the Eldridge brothers had their own
band. Didn't you say something about the Elite something?
Eli Serenade.
Eli Serenade.
Oh, that was back in the 20s. That was Joe Eldridge.
Right.
Roy was only about 14 years old. But Joe was older. But he would go and sit in with them. Now, see, Roy wasn't old.
Yeah,
musicians,
right.
But he had strong
right. You know what, talking about that, I remember one time when I was in high school that I had to be either 9th or 10th grade. We played Allegheny High School football.
Yeah. Oh, you marched in the band.
I was in the band. And up there on the hill where Community College is, I was there on football field.
Yeah, Monument.
Monument Hill.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember a trumpet player doing something for that Allegheny, and I don't know whether it was Roy Eldridge.
No, Roy wasn't here. See, when Roy left here, he went out west.
Okay.
And he got to the guy that was out there. See, out west around Oklahoma.
When did he leave? In the middle 30s?
No, Roy left here in the 20s.
Oh, the 20s.
Eli Serenade left here, they left in around about 1925. That was before Roy left, Earl Hines. Roy, like Honey Boy, 14 or 15 years old, true enough, but I was looking for him. He went out west, and he worked with a guy named Speed Webb.
In relation to Chick Webb?
No, this is Speed Webb.
Speed Webb, okay.
And that's what, well, Roy played with Speed Webb for years.
One of them territory bands out there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like Nat Toles, Ernie Field.
Right.
Now, the bug band out in that area was the Benny Moten band.
Right, okay.
That's before Count got there.
Right.
See, Count left with a band from around New York, and they got stranded out there.
Okay.
And Count was dragged as a boat of problems. But Benny and them took him in.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why Walter Page, Jimmy Rushing, and the first trumpet player named Joe Key, they resented Count because when John Hammond came to Kansas City, Count was playing in his group, but he was not near the musician. They closed guys up, and John Hammond chose him and built the band around him. And this is what finally broke that band up. As soon as Jimmy Rushing and them hit New York off of it and got themselves established and found out where they could get them, they pulled out the band. See, Count had two or three bands.
Right.
Like, last night, I was listening to Tony Moore, but I don't try to identify him. And he had this lion's roar. Yeah, with the bass you had.
Yeah.
So when I heard this Roy Gold band, I had to call because I'm out in the bar. I called him and I said, hello, Tony. I said, what band, what version of the Basie band was that?
Oh, that was Frank Foster.
And it wasn't Frank, ain't never represented or led any group that was tacky as that. So I'm familiar with the Basie band, it's just like Grover Mitchell. Frank Foster had the band first, then Frank West took it. And when they departed, Grover being a section man had connected because he was a monkey putting the counter around in the wheelchair because he couldn't solo. And they put a band around him. But in talking to his son, you tell me that he got a sextet or something.
Yeah, somebody told me that it's another, a smaller group. Now,
yes.
I don't know whether it's from the Basie people or not.
No. See, because when I went down to hear that band about 3 years ago on the boat, and I looked at her, I said, let's go to myself, because I had met the piano player on a Saturday. I was over in Oakland, and I saw this guy, they got coming out, and he said, man, do you know where I can go and practice piano? He said, I'm with the Basie band. And I said, oh, I was taking a course over there to hit, you know, for piano.
Right.
And I said, well, look, I'm going, come on with me and I'll take you up to this building. And when I took him up to the building, the lady who was teaching, she said, sure, you can go downstairs. We have 3 or 4 grand. And then right away I said to myself, this campus is wide open because anybody could go. And if a woman come down there, she could be attacking. He went down. I said, look, I'm coming to the concert on Sunday. This is on a Saturday. And I said, I'll identify myself when I... And I did. But he was a guy they picked up somewhere around Detroit. To join
just
the band.
Just to make this date.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I guess it's... And when I got down there and I saw... He was so busy trying to get himself together to play the chords and he couldn't... And the bass player at this, trying to keep time. They had this mic going on. And Roger was there. And this boy takes pictures of Nelson Harrison was there. And Mitchell wouldn't talk to him. He said, he's insecure. Now here I am, I know the personnel of the original band. Here's a floogie because he's insecure. That's the same way with Horace Turner. I took him by the hand and gave him a gig. And I've been in and out of there on many occasions. Emo, what's your name? Before I try to play trumpet.
Oh, yeah, Roland.
Roland said, Kurt DuHorris, oh, you here? I said, him and Mary both know I'm here, but I ain't rushing up there.
Don't press it. No,
I ain't pressing nothing. Just like John here. You know, I'm too intelligent to stoop to that level.
We gotta consider
but he don't know that I read him like a book with his sneaking. But anyhow, it's funny about that thing. See, I at count every night when we take a little break down there, he would toss at me and Freddie Green.
Right.
See, before Freddie Green, Freddie was around New York, working around a place called the Black Cat, because Eddie was in New York at the time. When they bring this band in, see, Freddie had a contact with John Hammond. Freddie was a hell of a problem. So he determined what the personnel
was going
to be. Count was so glad to get the break. Count was a down-to-earth guy and was ready. And that's what kept them going. See, Walter Page, before that, had his own group, the Kansas City Blue Brothers. And I met his brother, Hubbard Page.
Yeah, right, Warren.
Who you call him, Warren? Warren Hubbard
Page.
The last, when I was out on the road with Joe Webb at 45, we ran into a hurricane at Hubbard had a group, but Joe Eldridge was there. Mm-hmm. He was talking. But Humphrey could play.
Yeah,
he
was
close.
Yeah.
And I imagine he was a better reader than Roy. So you take them boys out of the Middle West and the South by going to them colored schools and universities. They learned the basic fundamentals, where those who come up here and got to come out of the cotton patch and come here, and there was no opportunity for them to do anything here, and this is what happened.
It's all coming together.
Yeah. Hey, look, I'm going to tell you something. I might, doing Black History Week, be appearing on a talk show.
The
CXJ.
Okay.
Would you want to come on there with me?
I don't care.
See, here's what I'm saying. These people are so, when I heard this burger in the talk, these people are so, now, I got the beginning of it. But what you've done as a researcher, you got the end of it up to the present day because you're still acting.
Yeah.
Now, I want to say this to you. If you consider it, okay, if you don't, I'm going to still go it alone. But it's hard for me. Don't you know, with the information you got, and the information I got, we could publish a book that would say...
Well, one of the things that's coming up, we made a contact with the archives, Universal Pittsburgh. And I'm hoping that this clarifies a lot of people's mind. I mean, once we begin to express this information, because I'm not trying to make a lot of money. You know what I mean? I'm not trying to get this information so that it'll be money making or anything like that. And if it's going to be preserved in the archives, that means more to me than putting it out as a book, you know, a saleable product. You know,
this is the same idea that I had, but John scuttled it by talking to me. And that caused me to have to say, I'll do my my autobiography.
Right.
But my intention was this. Yeah. If this, our history was going to come out,
it should be right.
And it should be on the universe. Yeah. It should come to a Black organization.
Right.
And so he saw fit to sneak around behind me and use what information and come up with this Afro-American Jazz Society. But he had to get you to do the research because he was too late.
You can interpret it that way, but I look at it differently because I really know for a fact that it came from me. Because John had no idea.
Was this really you?
This is me.
Well, I know that. I got it in black and white.
I know that, but I'm just saying that that's John's way.
Is this really you?
Yes, sir. This is me. I found, I'll tell you when I found it. In February, when I found that Jackson Street After Hours book.
Yeah.
That's when it began. Because I was talking to John, Bill Cotton, and I've been calling a couple other guys about their 50-year membership cards in the union. But in the meantime, I started going through this book, and I got the idea, wait a minute, if they did it out here, we can do it here. And then I went to John, I laid the book on him, you know, and he went through it, and then we started talking.
So this is original.
No, this is my thing.
He came. Look,
I know
that. He came to me and said, why not us?
I know that.
Now, I'm going to be honest with this, what he told me.
Yeah.
He said, Kurt, I ain't going to be running around doing research and getting in
there. I can understand that. I can understand, because I hear that from you all the time.
Yeah, and he said to me, I said, now what the knowledge that I have, I don't have to research.
Mm-hmm. I know, because you got it. It's yours.
Yeah. And
because that's what I was trying to explain to you. You know, if whatever information that you have that is personal in your autobiography. I mean, you know, you have the discretion. If you want to give it to me, fine. If not, I mean, I can understand it, you know.
Yeah. But I'm not a selfish person.
No.
And what I saw, the only problem that I have is like,
I know, the way it was presented to you.
Yeah, and then the way that it went through the universe. I always felt if there was a university in the city, that the most liberal was Duquesne.
Well,
see,
maybe
now
so,
what John is doing, because of his connections with the university,
right.
This is why Kathy, when I amended that first meeting, he dropped the head and started thinking, oh, he told me all about you. But I didn't know.
You didn't know about Catholic.
No, and I didn't know originally that was your
idea. No, it's our mind. I mean, because in fact, that's part of the problem. I don't have a problem, but that article, I didn't bring you that article from the. I got to bring you that article from the International Musicians.
Yeah, you gave me.
Did I give you a copy of that?
No, you didn't give me a copy.
Okay, I'll see that you get a copy of that, because the first line in that article, because there's a picture of us on the steps the day that we took that picture, and then the first line of that article says, "Charles Austin, jazz trumpeter in Pittsburgh," and I said, that. Lets people know it's my baby and all the work that's been going on. I'm the one that's out here running ragged.
But you know what? I didn't know.
No,
And that's original. And I'm satisfied.
This is me. This whole thing.
I'm satisfied.
And like I said, my idea is, I mean, maybe I don't want to say that I'm being naive to believe in human, you know, goodness and kindness, but I'm trusting that the information and help and leads and things that they give to me. That's how we got to the university. The first time was through Kathy and John's connection with Dave Upperson. Out there we had one year, he was head of the dean at the university, because we had an office, you know, we had an office and a computer, we had a whole setup out there. This was last year, till June, till the school year ended. And we had a student that was assigned to us. Now, we through Ann Feeney at the Union, she made the connection with this Dave Rosenberg at the Hillman Library with the archives.
That's how you got connected.
No. Money came through Kathy and our drawing of grants. You know, that's how we got the money. But I'm saying what is now happening through the archives, and they want to preserve. I'm believing that that's a better way to go, and that makes people understand that we're nonprofit.
Yeah. See, here's the thing about it. See, Carnegie was trying to get the same type of information, and they was paying money because Brother Runnels told me about it. This was last year.
Oh, a while back, yeah.
And this is how the different ones had that connection, like Kenya Harris and them.
Yeah, right. With the photos and so forth.
Yeah, but the thing about it is, Kenya don't own his own photo.
No, he got rid of somebody beat him out of it.
I didn't beat him, here's what happened. Kenya, you like to go to the racetrack. When Woogie lost out in the number, Kenya didn't have no job, and he got that job at the Courier. But what happened, if you had an affair and you got didn't get Teeny to do the photography, then it would never be published in the Courier.
Right. Oh, this could be exclusive. Right.
What? I stayed with bandwidth as a get together for the musicians club. But we got a guy up on Watt Street named Moses Arrington to do the photography.
There was an Arrington Harrington.
There's a Harrington.
Harrington had a club. Harrington had something to do with a club. I think it was Court Place. I'm not quite pleased. Well,
yeah, I know Bob Dews was involved in it, and a guy, this guy's name was.
Okay, because I know that name Harrington because my mother worked there.
Yeah. But the guy, his name, he was in the Navy. His name was, his brother's name was Head Trucking.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
Art Terry.
Yeah. Right, that's it. Harrington. That's the guy.
Art Terry.
He bought a car out for me in 50. Let's see. I know, he was in everything.
He broke the strike.
Yeah.
The problems because him and his brother were truckers.
Right.
Down there on Harry
right,
Avenue.
Right, right.
And he.
I remember that too.
Yeah, he ain't doing
that. No. I mean, things happen because they have
the construction company. The lawyers were running in a serious way. And when, now that I know this is your idea, I don't have no qualms about the information that you're working with you.
I mean, I kind of figured, I mean, as long as, I mean, because I've been very much upfront with you all along. We've talked and I trust you. I trust you, you know, I mean, you are my ace, you know, and I know that, you know, as whatever information that you have, I will gladly give it to you, but then I keep explaining to you, you know, if you're going to do your book and whatever you, you know, that's personal information, that's fine, I can understand that. You know.
But I wouldn't withhold nothing from you, because if I do that, there's a conflict of interest, and it's contradictory, and it leaves people to say, well, this guy say this, and this guy say that. So the way I look at it is, so that the truth, see, what I'm interested in is the correct information
that's
is presented.
Yes, that's all I'm trying to do.
This is what I'm saying, the correct information goes down. Ain't nobody riding side saddle or weaving in between. This is our history. See?